My name is James Matthews, and I'm an alcoholic. And that's pretty good. My arm's a little bit long. I'll reach around and pat myself on the back for that one. Anyway, I want to thank David for asking me over, giving me the opportunity to do this. For anybody that's disappointed, after I get through, you can kick his ass. Don't let him put one of these together again. You already see the result of it, or at least half. Enjoyed Olga's talk. Truly did. I put this on because you deserve it. You really do. You know, the day that I came to you, I walked in, I planted myself firmly on a couch, and depending on who you talk to, some of us lie better than others. They said that my chin was dragging the floor. Olga was taking notes, and according to a little black-haired nurse named Sharby, who's also at that big old meeting up there with Sheila, I glared all the way through that damn meeting. And I wasn't glaring, honey. I was listening. I was trying like hell to hear everything you had to say because I didn't have nothing else, you know. I was about 3 hours out of jail with a DWI that I never intended to get, just like the other one that I didn't intend to get. I had come home and been abandoned by my only friend. That was the partner that I had that wasn't real happy with me that morning, and he left me with her. And unbeknownst to me, a while previous, she had been talking with one of those people that goes into that other room at our meeting houses, one of those Al-Anons. And this lady had listened to her tale of woe about this drunk husband that she had. She had gone home on her lunch hour one day, way out in the country, and got some of that literature that your stepfather found laying around, only it was for that other group. And she brought it back to her and suggested that she read it. And whenever she went back to school the next day to work, the lady asked her if she'd had a chance to read it. And she said, oh, I didn't have to. He came home and he's not going to do that anymore. And the lady, and you know, maybe you've heard this, maybe you've been the one that was saying it. She said, you know, I hope that you're right. But if it happens again, you call somebody in Waco because I'm too far away to help you. So while I was out enjoying myself so much, she made a phone call, and she didn't get an Al-Anon. What she got was she got a woman alcoholic. And that lady did something that we supposedly do. She shared her experience, strength, and hope. And the only experience that she had to share with that girl that night was that if you'll go to this address tomorrow at noon, there'll be people there that can help you. And that's all that she told her. So that was what was waiting on me whenever I got home. You know, I walked in and I assumed the position on the couch, you know, the one where I sit down and I put my elbows on my knees and my head in my hands and I tell her I'm sorry that I did what I did. And I told her that I needed some help. And for the first time, I followed it up with, and you can't help me. You know, in the past, you know, she had been my solution, or my parents had been my solution, or somebody. And she said, well, I'm going to go down at noon and meet with some people and get some help. And I said, can I go? And she said, yeah, but whether you go or not, I'm going. You know, I don't know if you've ever felt like you were alone, but sitting there on the couch that morning, you know, there wasn't nobody else. Wasn't nowhere to go. Nobody. And a short while later, we walked into our first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I did what come natural. I got as far away from y'all as I could. I went and found me a spot on the couch over there where there wasn't nobody sitting. And before I got to that couch, there was this old white-haired son of a... Yeah. And he raised up out of his chair. I didn't know him well enough to call him that then. You know, it's just the first day. It takes 2 days to get to know him, and then you can call him that. He raised up out of his chair. He stuck his hand out. He introduced himself, and he said, we're glad you're here. Or I'm glad you're here. Something to that effect. I don't remember. You know, what I do remember is that somebody said that they was glad I was there, and I couldn't understand why. You know, And that was Bill Adair. And it'd take a while, but somewhere along the line, he and I got together, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And he said yes. You know, don't remember that old man ever saying no. I really don't. You know, you can say yes to everybody that asks you to sponsor them, and you'll always have time for the ones that mean they need a sponsor. Because 90% of them, unfortunately, are going to say, well, you be my sponsor, and you'll never talk to them again. You'll sit in the same meetings with us, and you won't talk to them again. But they've got them a sponsor. And I'm still on my way to that couch, and there's another little old man, and he's standing behind the coffee bar. And, you know, he might have shook my hand if I'd have stuck my hand out, but I didn't. And he smiled and offered me a cup of coffee. And I declined. I just wanted to get somewhere and sit down. And that was Woody, you know. And kind of like the Whitney group, there's a handful of us that feel strongly enough about that old man, just like y'all did y'all's old man, that we put his picture on the wall. If you ever go to Triangle Group and you don't know whose picture that is on the wall, the third one down, you know, it's not Bill and it's not Dr. Bob. That old man's name was Woody. You ask me and I'll tell you who he was. You know, he was my friend. And if that lady hadn't went and got that literature for that girl that day, I would have never met him, and I sure as hell wouldn't have met you. You know? I walked into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, kind of like my buddy Olga back there. All I wanted you to do was tell me how not to drink, and I would have been okay. Because I knew from past experience that whenever I didn't drink, things got better. You know? And I failed to remember that after I had not drank for a while, things went to hell again. Every time. No exceptions, you know? We had varying periods of okayness. You know, sometimes they lasted for a few days, sometimes for a few weeks. One time almost for a year. God, she stayed on me for a whole year to not drink. But you know, as soon as I got started again, we're just right back there that quick. Just that quick. And you know, that's kinda where my last drunk took off. You know, I hadn't drank in about 6 months, and it was Christmas, and I went to a party. And this guy that I went with, you know, I told him time after time after time, you know, I don't drink. But we were trying to shortcut the, you know, get around dinner and all the speeches and get the bonus and get the hell out. And he said, do you want a beer? And I said, no, I got a Coke. We rode around a little bit, and he said, do you want a beer? And I said, yeah, and drank a six-pack, you know. And went home, and wives are observant. She said, you've been drinking. And I said, yeah, but we're not fighting. It's going to be okay. And, you know, she agreed one more time. And that's what we did for the next, hell, I don't know, 3 years, 3.5 years. We just fought. Didn't either one of us run. We just stayed and fought it out to the bitter end. And, you know, that drunk that started that night, it was just like all the rest of them. My first drunk, I was 12 years old. I split a case of beer with another 12-year-old kid. We drank every bit of it. We got drunk, we puked, we passed out, and I woke up the next morning ready to do it again. And you know, I don't care how bad it was the night before, I've always been ready to do it again. Now, sometimes I remembered how wonderful it was the night before, and other times I didn't. Yeah. But to go back even further than that, you know, my parents, that's not the way they raised me. You know, there was drinking in my family. My father enjoyed drinking a little beer. My mother enjoyed drinking a little bit of beer with him. Drinking was never a problem until my mother developed diabetes and she couldn't drink with him. Then he had a drinking problem. And, you know, I just never saw it. You know, I remember wanting to drink with my father, you know, and on occasion he would let me have a little sip. And after I got a little bit bigger, he actually let me have one whole can of beer to myself. By the time I got around to where I could get it for myself, I was ready, you know. But the thing is, you know, I mean, everything about my family, my growing up, my childhood and all, it was just normal. Wasn't nothing special about it. Mom and Daddy took the time to teach me the difference between right and wrong. I don't remember either one of them sitting down saying, James, tonight we're going to teach you how to lie. I don't remember either one of them saying, "You don't know how to steal, but we're going to show you." And if you need to get ahead a little bit because old so-and-so over there's got just a little bit of an edge on you, we're going to teach you how to cheat. You know, they taught me the difference between right and wrong. And you know, my father was a civil servant. He worked for the fire department. My mother was a housewife. She stayed home. She took care of the house. She did the cooking, the cleaning, the washing, took care of the kids. You know, all that stuff that mothers do, you know, from my generation. And, you know, it was never good enough. Not for me. I don't remember my brothers or sisters complaining about anything that we had, you know, or anything that we didn't have. But nothing that those people could offer me was enough. And I asked for everything, you know, everything. I didn't want you coming to my house because my house wasn't as good as yours was. And I was afraid that if you saw the way that I lived, you wouldn't like me. You know, if you saw the way that our house was, you know, you'd look down on me. And I didn't want you there. I never, never stopped to consider why it was that you and you and you and you seemed to want to go to my house all the time. I couldn't, you know. I mean, my mother treated my friends mean. She did. She made us mind. She wouldn't let us cuss. You know, just all that kind of stuff. You know, she fed us. She wouldn't let us sit in the house and watch TV all the time. She'd make us go play. Didn't care how long we stayed out there and played and everything. I couldn't understand why in hell y'all would want to come to my house. You know? My mother was one of these, mothers about that tall. You know? And she was a large woman. She wasn't large. What she was fat. That's what I saw. You know? And I had to be with her. And I was ashamed of her. I truly was. And whenever we had the service for my mother, that little chapel there at the funeral home, you know, it's just full of all them old women. You know, the people that were her friends, the people that loved her, that didn't see a fat woman that they were ashamed of. It was somebody, you know, that cared about them that they cared about. But we're not talking about them. We're talking about me, you know. And what I discovered whenever I drank was all that stuff went away. You know, it didn't make any difference who she was. It didn't make any difference how I lived. You know, it didn't make any difference. You know, it just went away. And if it'll do that, you know, why not do it? Why not do it to excess? You know, if a little makes you feel good, then a lot will make you feel better. And, you know, that's what I was shooting for. If I lied, cheated, and stole a little bit, this thing would kick in, and it's called a conscience. That's one of the things that you acquire whenever your parents teach you the difference between right and wrong. And what I discovered was I could drink 3 or 4 or 5 beers, and conscience would get pushed to the back, and let's have fun would come to the front. You know? Up until the time I was 12 years old, I did what those people told me to do. You know, and as soon as I drank the way we drink, you know, the only thing that mattered was what I wanted. And it didn't make any difference who you were or what you were. If you had what I wanted, I was willing to go to any length to get it. Sound like something out of a big book. Yeah. And, you know, as a result, people get hurt. And some of them you like, some of them you don't like, some of them you know, and some of them you don't. It doesn't really matter. You know, just so long as I can get what I want. And, you know, that's the way I lived. You know, from the beginning to the end, that's the way I lived. And I'm not particularly proud of it, but hell, it's truth. You know, I told somebody a while ago, all I got to remember is 2 things tonight. Don't lie, and whenever I get through talking, say thank you and sit down. So far, I'm doing pretty good. I'll do this if I start lying. I found me one of those hers. You remember hot pants? I do too. Didn't need no boots. There she was, you know, and she had on the hottest hot pants I have ever seen in my life. And again, go back to the big book. She had what I wanted, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. Yeah. And that was my victim. You know, We had a kid and got married in that order. And it didn't take long until, you know, our ideas of having fun changed. You know, I wanted to go out and drink with y'all, and she wanted to stay home and be a mother and father. Yeah, and you can't do that, or at least I can't. I don't want to, you know. And we got to where we would play a game about whoever could get out of the house first, you know. Yeah, whoever got out of the house first didn't have to put up with that damn kid, the other one did. You know, and we just kind of shuffled him back and forth like a chess piece. I talked in front of a group of Valentines one night, and I told that. And after it was over with, they did a little question and answer. And one of the kids said something, and if you've ever been hit with a baseball bat, here it comes. What happened to the kid? Yeah, and that's about how quiet I was. What happened to the kid? Yeah. I'll jump ahead and I'll tell you about the kid. You know, today that kid's almost 34 years old. Early last year, he and his wife had a son. And before they had that baby, they said, I want to ask you a question. I said, all right. They said, can we name our little boy after you? And I said, hell, it's your kid. Name him whatever you want to. So I got this grandchild running around. No, he ain't running yet. He's still kind of pushing off. He might be a good wide receiver someday. He's pushing off and falling down a lot. Reminds you of T.O. But his name is James William. And he got ears like his grandpa and like his daddy. So, you know, we got that much family resemblance. And he's got a mother who is large that loves him. And I love her. And I don't give a damn. She doesn't never lose an ounce. I love her. And he will too. But anyway, you know, we shuffled that kid back and forth, and it didn't really matter to me. You know, I drink 3, 4, 5 beers, and I don't care. And I go on and do what I want to do. That lady get up in front of me like she thinks she's going to stop me, and she's about that big. I'm about this big. And you ask them to move or tell them to move or just move them, you know. And, you know, you introduce physical violence into a relationship. And whenever they come back the second time, it's a whole lot easier than it was the first. And the next time, it's even easier than that. You don't have to drink nearly as much to quit hurting. You know, it just gets to be a part of the game. And you know, that's what we did. And we did that deal for a long time. We came to Waco from Corsicana. I helped her move to Corsicana after Waco to get away from me. And after we got her settled in, you know, she said, you know, this is nice. And I said, it really is. She said, why don't you stay? And I said, okay. Yeah. We made that geographical cure for her, and she just took the disease with her. And, you know, that's where I was at whenever I went to that Christmas party that year. You know, did good for 6 months. Kid was doing kid things. Wife was doing wife things. I was doing whatever dads and husbands do. And I wasn't drinking, and life was good. And I changed that one more time, you know. We walked into that meeting that day, and whenever they asked, is there anybody here for the first time, I said, my name's James, and I've got a drinking problem. And that was what I had, was a drinking problem, you know. And they had a newcomers meeting that day, and they shared, and the people that were in that meeting that day, there weren't that many people, but there were a lot of you. There was a hell of a lot more of y'all than there was of me. And the people that shared in that meeting that day shared some of them with me. And while they were talking about themselves and describing themselves, they were hitting me so hard with all the stuff. And that little black-headed nurse said something. I've been called a lot of things in my drinking career. Ain't none of them good, and I ain't going to repeat half of them in here tonight. She said, if you drink the way I drink, you probably suffer from a disease, and that disease is alcoholism. You know, you're an alcoholic. So we don't have a cure, but we do have treatment. And that's this program, these 12 steps. She never told me that I was an alcoholic, but it's the first time that I heard the word alcoholic used. I've been called a drunk. I've been called sorry. I've been called weak-willed. I've been told a lot of stuff, but that was the first time that anybody ever hit me with just a solid answer, something that I could reach out and grab a hold of. You know, there's a disease and it's alcoholism. You're an alcoholic. Here's what you do. You know, that's pretty damn simple. You know, the things that were shared with us that day, and I have to say us because she and I went together, the things that were shared with us that day are the same things that we share in a newcomer's meeting today. Simple stuff. Don't drink, go to meetings, read the book. Trust God, clean house, help others. Probably don't hear them last through the first meeting, but they say it. Some of us forget. Sometimes I forget. I won't talk about you. Sometimes I forget. And I skip over part of this stuff that may save that newcomer's life. I go straight from, this is what I did to, you know, things are good. And I leave out some of the rough stuff in between, you know. And whenever they try to go from the start to the end and they don't get there, I really believe they wonder, what am I doing wrong, you know. And if they're like me, they got too damn much ego left to say, what am I doing wrong? And some of them do. And you know, my opinion, that's what that was. You know, I believe that sometimes I leave stuff out and I cheat them out of an opportunity to stay sober. I really do. I try not to do that, but, you know, I'm human. I'm fallible. They told us some silly stuff. They said that they understood. And by listening to them, you know, I really believe that they did. They said that they cared. And I don't know whether they did or not, but I just took their word for it. And that deal about 90 meetings in 90 days, they said that over and over and over. And I heard it over and over and over, you know. And they said, come back. Yeah. And we went home and talked that day. And you know, we talked not about what I had done the night before. We didn't talk about the fight and me terrorizing her and that little boy. We didn't talk about me tearing up the house. Didn't talk about her calling or him calling the cops on me, or what that DWI was going to cost. You know, what we talked about was what y'all had shared with us that day in that meeting. And we, to ourselves, you know, we made that commitment. We would try and do this 90 meetings in 90 days deal. She didn't realize she didn't have to do that crap. I did. But she made a bunch of meetings, you know. The next night, you know, they had AA and Al-Anon there, their own Franklin, and we showed up. And for the most part, we've been showing up ever since. A little bit of our time off for bad behavior, but, you know, we've been showing up ever since. Excuse me. We walked back into those meetings, and she went into her Al-Anon meeting, and I went in there with y'all. And everybody, you know, not everybody, but a lot of these guys would walk up and they'd say, hi, James, how you doing? James, you doing all right tonight? Just confused the hell out of me. I thought, how can they remember my name? I couldn't remember none of y'all. I ain't got no college education. By the time I was 15 years old, I'd figured out that I knew all that I needed to know about the school system, and I quit. Now, it never occurred to me that they were remembering one name and I was trying to remember 15 or 20. Yeah. But there was, yeah, it is funny. Some of these people wonder why we treat them like they're dumber than dirt and everybody get here. Because we are. I would sit in the meetings with y'all and I would listen. You know, somewhere along the line, nobody told me to shut up. First mistake right there. Nobody told me to shut up. I opened my mouth and I ain't quit since. David called and asked me to do this. Before he got the words out of his mouth good, I said, yeah. He there told me, he said, if they ever invite you to talk at one of these things, take them up on it. Because once they hear you, they may not ask you again. I talked to my home group, and it took 10 years before they let me come back and talk again. That's a true story. It really is. I was about 30 days sober, just barely 30 days sober. And a gentleman that I make meetings with today came up, and he said, there are a few of us that are fixing to get together, and we're going to take a little guide that we've got, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 and 12, and we're going to take the steps together. Would you like to be a part of it? And I said, yes. You know, didn't hesitate. Yes. And had absolutely no idea what I was getting myself into. You know, I felt like, again, I'm not real smart, so I don't know, but I felt like I had done 1, 2, and possibly 3, and I'm looking at a 4th step that I have no idea where to stop, start, or end. You know, if there's a middle to it, I don't know. And so on Tuesday nights, we would get together down at St. Albans Church there in Waco, and there were 13 of us that sat down with this guide. And it was funny because the guide kept referring back to the 12 and 12, or to the big book, and this is what we're doing, and this is what we're doing. And you know, the idea of taking steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is foreign, you know, because somewhere along the line there was a bunch of guys that had been around for a hell of a long time, came up with this novel idea. Why don't we take the big book and do what it says do and see if we can stay sober that way? We hadn't been able to the other way. And they did, and they did, you know. And we, the 13 of us, good even number, we started off at step 1, and whenever we got to step 3, we did something silly. We got on our knees, and we held hands, and we prayed together. We got up, and we immediately started on an inventory, you know. And I'm doing this inventory, and I'm doing the very best that I can. I'm writing it, I'm writing it, I'm writing it, and all of a sudden fear sets in one more time, you know. And this is the first time I've been scared sober. Of course, I ain't been sober but 2 months, so, yeah. And I thought, Jesus, if Cole finds out what I'm putting down here, he ain't going to like me. If Wayne finds out the stuff that I'm writing down in this inventory, he ain't going to like me. There ain't no way that David would want to put up with somebody like me. And that old woman that you talked about, you know, your sponsor, right after I sobered up, she had an automobile accident. She broke herself up bad, and she couldn't actually do everything she needed to do by herself. And there was 2 or 3 of us little babies around there. And what she would do, she liked to stay after the meeting, so she would stay and sit, and we would talk. And I could ask her all those stupid questions that Mel or Doug would laugh at if I asked them, you know, and she would answer them. And them other 2 old boys would do the same thing, you know. And she just sat there, and that's what she shared with us. And whenever that fear set in, you know, I went to her and I said, look, here's what we're doing and here's what I've got to do. I've got to share this stuff with somebody. And if I share it with Olga, she ain't going to like me no more. And she said, why don't you try this? When's your next meeting? And I told her. She said, why don't you go and just tell the guys in the group where you're at. Tell them what your fears are. And let them know that you're willing to do whatever they want you to do. And I went in there. And I sat down that night, and I shared my fears with them. And they said, you know, the 4th step actually says, whatever. And the 5th step says, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. It didn't say anybody in this damn room. You know? Sometimes the black part that I read ain't the black part that they wrote. I'm sure that nobody else suffers from that, but, you know, I wear glasses, and I still do it. And they laughed at me that night, you know, and I didn't get mad, and I didn't feel humiliated. And I went ahead and I finished that 4th step, and I did a 5th step with somebody. And you know, between then and now, everything that was in that 4th step, I've had the opportunity to share with another alcoholic, and it didn't bother me that they were going to hear it. You know, I gave it to them because I thought, I hoped that whatever it was that I had done would help them to get through what they were going through, you know. And it's been that way. You know, we kept on going. We looked at these little defects of character that we have. 7th step come along. Hell, got down on our knees, held hands, prayed again, got up, went on with the rest of the steps. Started trying to straighten things out like they talk about with the 9th step. You know, some of the people that I love the most took the longest for me to get willing to go to them, you know, and try to set things straight. Managed to do it. One in particular, you know, my oldest brother, loved the man to death, proud to tell anybody that that man is my brother. And yet I couldn't go to him and say, look, you know, this is the way I treated you and the reason that I did is, and, you know, fill in the blanks. And finally, you know, I had the opportunity. I sat down with him one night, and I told him my side of the story, and then he returned, you know, that with his. And God, I mean, you know, you change the names, and it's the same story. His fears are the same as mine, you know, almost without exception. Everything that I felt, he felt. You know? And, you know, I love him, he loves me, and we go on from there. You know, part of the deal, part of the commitment that we made whenever we started this little deal was that, one, we would do our best to finish it. Two, whenever we finished, either alone or with somebody else, we would get together and try and do the same thing with another group of guys, and did that. Yeah. I don't do anything today that wasn't done for me, you know. And that's my commitment to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I really feel like it's my responsibility, not yours, but mine, you know, to give back what I was given. And there's no way that I can sit down and lay out what was there that first day and then the days afterwards, the years afterwards, you know. Whenever I'm sitting there and I'm dying, I'm falling apart, you know, and there's always somebody there to spend some time with me, you know. Me and that old man, that second old man, you know, we would get together on Sunday mornings and we would clean the place up, getting ready for y'all later. And, you know, we'd clean a little bit, drink a little coffee and smoke too many cigarettes. And, you know, you hear this whistling sound, you look across the room and he's signaling time out. And we'd sit down and we would talk. And, you know, we're two alcoholics. We're two sober alcoholics. And we didn't talk about drinking. I'm not saying that in those conversations, you know, some little something didn't come up. But we didn't talk about drinking or not drinking. What we talked about was living. You know, we talked about living sober. We talked about our lives and our work, the things that we liked, you know. Woody had a deal about a pink cloud. You know, I don't hear people talk about pink clouds in my meetings a whole lot anymore. They talked about being on that pink cloud and not having to come off, you know. And I think, Jesus, you know, how in the hell do you do this? He talked about those promises that we read in some of our meetings. And I asked him one night, I said, those promises. He said, yeah, what about them? I said, you ever have them come true in your life? He looked at them for a second, thought about it, and he said, every day. You know? And I watched him slide off almost of that little pink cloud one day. And it was something that he had, you ready for this? Absolutely no power over. You know, powerless, totally. You know, and it was another person and their feelings. And he couldn't change them as much as he loved them. He couldn't change their feelings. He couldn't change their circumstances. You know, the only thing he could do is just keep on loving them until they got back up. And, you know, he didn't come off a cloud. It's hard to imagine spending 5 years with somebody and whenever they go, it hurts as much as if you had spent a lifetime with them. Now, whenever that old man went, if you've ever seen a dog lose its master, okay? If you've ever seen a dog lose its mate, they just kind of walk around aimlessly. They have no purpose. They have no nothing. You know? And I've got people saying, are you okay? And I said, yeah. They say, you going to be all right? And I said, yeah. And God, I'm dying. And somewhere along the line, y'all said, you know, right. Frank Shope, that old son of a bitch. Excuse me. Write it down. I'm glad he wasn't my sponsor. I killed him. Y'all said right. And I sat up there in what's the front room now? It used to be the Al-Anon room at their triangle. And I got a notepad out and I just started writing a letter. You know, and I'm writing a letter to my God about my friend. And I knew that old man wasn't going to last forever. But damn it, I wasn't through with him yet. You know? And whenever I got through writing that, I tore it off the pad, I wadded it up, and I threw it in the trash. Now, the hurt that I felt didn't go away. Okay? The way that I felt about that old man and continue to feel about that old man has not gone away. He was and is my friend. And I sat down there some mornings by myself And I look at his picture. And it's good. It is. You know. Remember, all that I wanted you to do was just show me how not to drink. Okay? Somebody said, put the plug in the jug. Don't take a drink one day at a time. I'm 22 or 23 years old, and I'm going to this marriage counselor with her. And we fill out this little questionnaire, and he goes over it. He's got a degree, you know, and a license. And he says, you know, there's nothing wrong with the way you two feel about each other. He's a marriage counselor. Did I say that? Yeah. He says, there's nothing wrong with the way you two feel about each other. He says, you got a drinking problem. I said, hell, I knew that. And he asked me a silly question. He said, could you not drink for 24 hours? And I said, well, sure. He said, at the end of that 24 hours, could you not drink for another 24 hours? And I said, sure. He said, why don't you try that? So I went home, and for 24 hours, I didn't drink. And after that, for the next 24 hours, I didn't drink. He didn't tell me what to do that third 24 hours. So what did I do? I went and drank. I mean, I finished the test. I hadn't stuck the thumb up yet. This is good. About Christmas time, 1984, I'm in Corsicana. I'm home. And I'm in a meeting, and we're closing the meeting, and there's this yo-yo across the room from me, and he looks so familiar. And we're holding hands, and we're praying, and he still looks familiar. I have a bad habit of looking up whenever everybody else is looking down. I want to see what y'all are doing. And finally, that voice got through to me. That's that damn marriage counselor. He was sober back then. But I was seeing him in one capacity, and I truly believe that had I continued to see him and not drink one day at a time, he would have told me about this other thing that he did. You know, years later, I moved back to Corsicana. I sat in meetings with him. Even went so far as to ask him to be my sponsor. I had to get away from that whenever he said, if I don't get a cigarette, I'm going to blow my brains out. I thought, hell, you're crazier than I am. Another true story. We are nuts. Somewhere along the line, what time am I going to be finished? Oh, Lord, you shouldn't have said that. I read somewhere after I'd been in here for a while, and I'm sure that somebody knows who actually said this. Either Dr. Bob or Bill Wilson was quoted as saying something to the effect. I can't quote it exactly. If I could, I'd remember who in hell said it. He said, this disease, and we do believe that it is a disease, is a family disease. And the family that fails to grow together grows apart. You know? And man, what's her name? What I couldn't do in 16 years of active alcoholism, I managed to do in 6 stone cold sober years of quote, recovery, you know, and she had enjoyed as much of me as she could stand, and she left, you know. And for the first time in my life as an adult, other than that one day on that couch, you know, I'm alone again, you know. And I say alone again, I had y'all, but I didn't have y'all. I didn't want y'all, okay. I went and found me a place, and I holed up and tried to figure out what in the hell I want to do, you know. She knew what she wanted to do, and it didn't include me. And you know, it's I would say it's difficult starting over, but hell, it's too hard. You know, I sat in this little hole in the wall apartment, felt sorry for myself. Had guys that I'd sat in meetings with and shared with and been shared to with, so forth, and that old sponsor of mine, you know. He had some cardinal rules that he laid down to me one day, and one of them was, if you want to see me, you come see me. You know where I live. You know where I go to meetings. You know when I go to meetings. If you want to talk to me, you come find me, because I sure as hell won't chase you. Mean old thing. And I'm sitting over there in that apartment by myself, and he come knocking on the door. And he don't tell me he loves me, it's good to see me, or nothing. He said, I want you to know right off the bat, I'm breaking my own cardinal rule by being here, and I won't do it again. Now, I could have cussed him, but I didn't. I'm better than that. I said, okay. You know? And, you know, I really don't remember what in the hell we talked about that day. He asked me if I needed anything, if I wanted to go to a meeting. He told me he loved me, and he walked out the door. And that's what all the rest of my friends did. Not one of them came in and told me how to live my life that day or the next day or the day after. You know, they asked me if I needed anything. They asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting. They told me they loved me, and they left. You know? And I'm sitting there with a loaded coffee pot and a loaded gun. And I never did empty that gun, but I sure as hell unloaded a lot of coffee pots. And I didn't cut myself off completely from y'all. You know, I kept my books around just in case. And I had a subscription to the Grapevine. If you've never read the Grapevine, ask your sponsor what one is. All right? And I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of thumbing through it one day. And they put these little bitty stories in there to fill up space from the big stories. You know, I got the little stories. Jerry's got the big stories. This was one of those cases where they took one of Jerry's little stories and put in there. And I'm by myself. You know, all I got's me and that magazine. Ain't no God. We live God out of this whole deal. And I'm reading a story. And again, I don't remember all the words. I can go get that copy of the Grapevine for you and let you read it for yourself. And you may read something totally different than I did that day. But this guy was talking about being pissed off because the people at his home group weren't treating the newcomers the way he felt like they should be treated. Y'all weren't treating the newcomers the way y'all had treated him. He realized that it was his responsibility and not yours to get off his ass and be at that meeting and welcome the newcomer the way he was welcomed. You know, I could get dramatic here and say, like Phoenix rising from the ashes. You know, what I did is I got up, I got cleaned up, and I went back. And I didn't want to be there. I really didn't. And I sat in there, and I sat on my end of the room while she and he sat on their end of the room. And I let them know that this is where I belong, and this is where I will be, and I don't give a damn who likes it. You know, this is where I belong. You know, this is home. And if you're uncomfortable at home, find you a new one. You know? And I'm still there. They ain't, but I am. If either one of those people were to call me at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, look, I need you, I would be there. And I mean that. You know, just because I don't like you, don't mean that I ain't there for you. You know, just because we disagree, you know, don't mean I'm going to let you die. That 12-year-old that I drank beer with out there behind the house one night, he got off into the oil field business, and I went into the carpentering business. And he went off and did some offshore drilling, and he came home with a pocket full of money and an armload of dope and a habit that he couldn't kick. And he called one of our buddies one night, running a beer joint down in Mahia. And he said, Roy, I really need to talk to somebody, man. I got this problem. And Roy said, Johnny, I'd like to help you, but I just got this little old barmaid to come home with me. If I get up and leave, she's going to go home, and she ain't going to come back. And he hung up on him. And, you know, there is a solution. If you don't know about one, you use the other one. And Johnny rode out on one of them old oil field roads by himself and stuck a gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. You know, pain's got to go away somehow. And if you don't know one way, you try something else. You know, and that's what he did. And, you know, I hope that I never have to realize or to know what it's like to die alone. I know what it's like to be alone, but I don't want to die that way. I won't have to today, you know. I got me another her. Took some time, but I found me one. We're good at that. We really are. And asked her out, and then went running to Bill, and I said, let me tell you what I did. And I told him, and I said, what do you think? We're good about asking our sponsors after we do something. I've said this on more than one occasion. Had he said, I don't think that's a good idea, I really believe I'd have called her back and said, my sponsor won't let me do this. I really do. You know, I trusted my judgment so little at that time that you know, if he'd have said, do it, I would do, you know, whatever. And, you know, that's not what he said. He made some suggestions. I'm going to go share them with you. They're cute and they're funny. And one of them involved not having sex until we got to be friends. But I'm not going to share that kind of stuff with you. What we did do is we took our time. We dated for about 4 years before we got married. And in the process, you know, I really believe that we got to know each other. We got to like each other, came to love each other, and at the same time, pulled three other people into the crowd, and that's our two daughters and our son, you know, my two other marriages. And, you know, whenever the time came, it wasn't 3 months after we first locked eyes on each other in that AA meeting, you know, I would bring her with me, and we'd walk into meetings. We'd sit in meetings together, open meetings. And whenever we'd walk in and it was a closed meeting, I'd send her up there to that other room. I trust those people in that other room, you know, with my life. I trust it with the life of somebody that I love, you know. You know, we went to conferences together with other people, you know, and just AA's there, you know. Al-Anon's there. It's a part of what we do. Having to learn how to raise two girls after raising a boy. Jesus Christ. Little boys, you just tell them, you know, go out and pee off the back porch, and they do it, and they're happy. Little girls, whole different book. Rule book on raising a little boy, kind of like how it works, front and back, that's it. You ever seen the service manual for AA? That's for raising girls. It is. I figured out what you do is two things. You don't lie to them, and you treat them like alcoholics. You don't lie to them, and whenever they're sharing something with you that they feel like is important, like that's going to bring their world down, you listen to them. And listen because there may be a test later. Listen because later you can use it as ammunition. That old sponsor sitting there one night, and I was talking, he said, wait a minute. He said, didn't you tell me one time, he couldn't have been listening to that. You know? I'm sitting there with them girls, and one of them started, yeah. I said, wait a minute. Didn't you? And she looked at me like, you old son. You really remember that? And I said, yes, I do. I listen to you. You know? And, you know, I don't know what kind of relationship I got with them girls. They come around the house. They seem to be happy to come around the house. You know? Got two little boys and a little girl. Little girl got a round head. Look like, what is it, South Park? she got that damn round head like them big eyes, pretty girl. Haley Grace, a gift. Yeah, a gift. That other old man, you know, he told me about Grace. He told me about a gift, you know. In 1995, I had just gotten this job, opportunity, an offer, and I was so excited about it. Something that I had never done before. And I'm ready to tell him about it, and he's telling me about a test that he's fixing to go take. And so we blew it off. And later on, I'm talking to him again, and I want to tell him about this job that I've taken and what I'm fixing to do. And they're telling me about this test that he took and what they found. And my job don't matter no more, you know, and what they found don't matter no more, you know. And it goes from being not that much to a little bit more than we thought to we can probably to we can, but it's not really going to do a whole lot of good. And everything that I walked in here with that day is right there. Trust me. Whether it's good, bad, indifferent, it doesn't matter. You know, there have been times in my life whenever I could go from zero to a disaster area, you know, like that. And I went from being excited to disappointed to mad to I want to say a full blown contained rage. You know what that's like? It's like wanting to hit whatever the hell's in front of you, and there is no cost. There is no price to pay. Just hurt something the way that you hurt. And that's what I wanted to do. And I couldn't. You know, I couldn't for two reasons. One, I'm going to hurt myself, and I know about self-preservation. Two, I'm going to tear up somebody else's property, and I sure as hell can't do that because I'm working inside my employer's store. But it doesn't make it go away, you know. And, you know, so you just, hell, you live with it. You know, that's what you do. You live with it. You give it over to God. If you want to sit around and talk about being powerless after you've been sober for 11 or 12 years, come talk to me. I'll tell you about powerless, you know. Kind of like that old man and that person that he loved, you know. If you want to talk about powerlessness, go and talk to him about powerlessness. It didn't go away just because I admitted it and accepted it and I hadn't taken a drink in a year or two. You know, I'm still just as powerless today as I was the day I walked in here. You talk about your God, I talk about my God. All right? I keep going because I know that that's what I'm supposed to do. I just keep going. My God does the rest. You know, a little bit of help from you and people like you. You know, that's it. I was reading a little book at the time, and shortly after, and there was a message in that book for me. I don't know about for anybody else, but sitting there reading that book, kid's book, you know, I found peace. I found okayness with the fact that that old man was going to die. All right? Nothing I can do about it. I can accept it. I can thank my God for the time that we had together. And I can share him with you. I can share him with people that never met him and will never meet him except through the stories that we tell. You know, those tapes that David's got. The pictures that have been taken. You know, and you'll know the same person that I knew. You know, but you'll know him in your way like I know him in mine. And I wrote him a little message inside that book, and I sent it to him. I don't know if he ever read it. It doesn't matter if he ever read it. I did, you know, and I found okayness. I cried for him that day, and I've cried for him since. And today it's good, you know. Still hurts, you know. Caring about somebody hurts. Y'all did that to me. I didn't ask you to do that. What I wanted you to do was show me how not to drink. Just show me how not to drink, and I'll just walk on out the door, and life will be wonderful. And then you sprung all this other crap on me. You know? You really did. It's been a good run. It really has. I thank you for inviting me. I thank you for listening to me. I thank you for sharing your lives with me. You know? I thank you for a beautiful introduction. You know? Friends should introduce friends, not strangers. Let people that know us introduce us, you know, because they're going to tell the truth. We're going to laugh. Some of us are going to get pissed off. You know, but it's going to be the truth. I'm going to tell one story, then I'm going to sit down. I told this story at the table a while ago. Jerry, this is at your expense. And I do this because I love you. I have since the first time I heard you. Olga had talked, and one of her babies was talking some trash over here about how hard it was to follow the other speaker. I'm 1 year sober, okay? 1 year sober. It's the first Heart of Texas conference there in Waco, and Jerry is Friday night speaker. And I've got to be responsible and chair the meeting at my home group, so I didn't get to hear him. I got down there at the ass end of his talk and immediately went into the kitchen so I wouldn't hear. I'd be busy. And then I bought the tape and I listened to it. Now, the next night, I'm supposed to talk at Freeman House. And I've listened to his talk, and I'm down. If you don't know what feeling inadequate is, be a year sober, be the scheduled speaker the next night, and listen to that gentleman before you go talk. And my sponsor's wife walks up, and she's bad about doing stuff like this. Later on, she would dig me even deeper. But she said, what's the matter, daughter? And I explained the situation to her. I said, I feel so damned inadequate. You know, I've got to go down there and talk to them. And, you know, they could be up here listening to people like him. You know, there's no way that I can talk like him. And she said, oh, honey, don't feel bad. Jerry's a trial lawyer. He talked for a living. And don't ever quit. Thank you.